Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and we've got a very special guest for you this week. It's FD's longest serving member. It's Dave Jackson. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well. I feel like I'm coping in the lockdown. I'm happy with Arsenal's form post-Christmas. Wasn't too happy before. In fact, I think during the Southampton game was the only time, never publicly, I was like, if we lose this one, then I think, we're in serious trouble and we would actually be in a bit of a relegation scrap. But since then, though, obviously smashed Chelsea. We look a little bit more of a team and more of how we were for the first 9 months of Arteta, where you could, even if we weren't getting the results, you could at least see what we were trying to do, the style we were trying to play. And yeah, feeling quite positive again. You know, this is the life and times of an Arsenal fan. It's a little bit up and down at the moment. But at the moment we're on an up. Yeah, so good.
I know, I agree with you. It's there's such a feel-good factor as well with the fact that it's the kids coming through the academy. Yeah. My wife said to me the other day that she was just you don't need to turn to me every time this one kid does something and say, he's from Ealing, you know? But every time Bukayo Saka scores or assists, I'm that kid's from Ealing.
I know. It is, isn't it? I think this was the worrying part for that October, November, December time, that a 19-year-old kid has been our best player constantly. And it's how has this happened, right? You know, and again, he's from West London, so well done. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, it kind of takes us into what we're going to talk about today, because I'm going to talk to Doogie Critchley later on about the Italian title race and about Atletico Madrid's move for Moussa Dembele. But before that, I wanted to talk to an Arsenal expert about the impending departure of Mesut Ozil, because you're absolutely right. Arsenal season this year, the bright spots in it for me have been guys like Gabriel, Saka, Smith Rowe, Tierney, young guys. And actually the veterans have been having a pretty bad year, and nobody more so than Mesut Ozil, who now seems to be on his way out of the club to Fenerbahce after 7.5 years. Now, just to go over the details of the deal, it looks like it would be a loan at first till the summer, and then he'd sign on a permanent deal. And at the moment, they're still trying to work out the details, whether Arsenal would pay him off all his wages, or whether they pay a percentage and Fenner would pay some, or whether, apparently Ozil's now suggesting he'd be willing to take the money in a couple of years' time, in kind of longer payments. So we're not quite sure what the finances look like. But it does look like he's going to go. And the thing that I found strange about this, and the reason I wanted to talk to you about it, was I am definitely at the point where I'm if he's not going to play, we're paying him so much money, obviously you try and move him on. But when there are rumours of him leaving, I see Arsenal fans on Twitter being so excited, and posting goal celebration gifts and stuff. And I just can't get on board with that, because I've loved Mesut Ozil's time at the club. And I really wanted to talk to you and ask you how you feel about Mesut Ozil leaving.
Okay, so I am very sad by the way that it's going to end. Feel So there's a few points. Obviously, I imagine we'll kind of talk about when he came, but I'm just talking about the last 2 years, right? We, as Arsenal fans, we have been in an era where we've had no loyalty, and Ozil was loyal, right? You know what I mean? We offered him a deal. It was almost the club offered him that $350,000, right? The fact that they're not now choosing to play, and that's not his fault, right? I've got no issue there whatsoever, and I also don't blame him for walking away on a free. He doesn't know, he's got to provide. I know he's probably very extremely well off, but he still has to provide, right, for the next 50 years of his life. So I've got no issue whatsoever there with him on the bench, or not even on the bench, and taking the wage from Arsenal. No issue with that whatsoever, because I think we shouldn't forget that when we gave him that big deal, there's no way that we could have afforded to lose Sanchez and Ozil in that same summer on essentially a free, because I know Sanchez, we got swapped with Mkhitaryan, but it was clear he wasn't going to sign a new deal. So at the time, and I also remember this, it was the same transfer window when we signed Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan. I think there was another player came in as well. And I remember, again, probably not, when I look back now, it probably wasn't the greatest of statements, but I was more happy that Ozil signed, because it was that stability again, right? You know, and it was a player that he wasn't quite, even at that stage, this would have been 2017, I guess. No, 2018, I guess, January 2018. And he wasn't the player that he had been, you know, but he still had them glimpses, right? He still could do it against lower league teams, right? Because, I'm very fond of Mesut Ozil, and I look back with a lot of like love and a lot of respect. And I don't think he deserves the way that he's kind of talked about in a negative way. Because as I said, like, he's not perfect, right? You know, and he was never going to be the player that was going to beat five players and put the ball in the back of it. That was never his skill set. You know what I mean? He's what made him so great was his assist, right? Was his ability to pick the right pass to kind of unlock a defense. And, it's hard to do that against the top team. So I think some of the negativity came, kind of directed at him was when he couldn't do that. And he looked like a bit of a passenger against the top teams, right? But it's really tough when you're playing against, you know, some of the best, you know, what's the word? Not even just the best teams, but like the way that they are structured, right? You know, where they would set up against Arsenal to nullify our assets, but then be very dangerous when they're going forward, right? So I think he still had a lot to offer. And again, I've kind of gone around the houses now. There was an element of this season when we were on that really bad run, and I'm thinking, there's no way Ozil, you can't tell me Ozil's not good enough to get into this team, when they were so starved of creativity. So like where you couldn't see how we were going to score. Like, you know, unless someone like Saka would beat a couple of players and then hopefully pick one of the strikers out, we just couldn't see how we were going to score. So that was the moment when I'm like, you can't tell me Ozil can't improve this team, right? You know, I think for the long term benefit of the club, it was probably wise to not bring him back, particularly if Arteta didn't see the future with him. You know what I mean? Because then you do kind of stunt the progression of your players like Smith Rowe and potentially a Saka. But then you look at some of the other players we were playing during that time, like your Williams and stuff like that. And again, that's the bit I wasn't quite understanding, how we were going to play players like that and not at least register Ozil. That there's clearly something going on, right? You know, there's something more than just football there. You know what I mean? And that's the bit that I don't like. You know, like, because And I guess that's the bit we'll never know, right? Because Ozil have his version, the club have his version, I guess Arteta have his version of events. But to sum up, to answer your original question, my feelings on Ozil is I am very fond of him, and I'm very sad to see the way that it's ended. I think he deserved a little bit better in terms of a send-off. Because I guess now we're going to kind of talk about how he kind of changed Arsenal and about when he first arrived in 13-14.
Yeah, well, he did arrive 2013, and like obviously we broke our transfer record by a huge degree, and it the news kind of broke after we beat Spurs 1-0 in the derby as well, the day before the window shut. And I remember thinking, like, it doesn't get better than this.
So was you at DV then? Was you at Football Daily then? I can't remember if you.
No, I joined. I think I joined in 2015.
2015. Okay.
Maybe. Or maybe just the year later. I don't really remember. But like, yeah, it wasn't that far before, because then there was because the thing about Ozil is like, we were kind of linked to guys like Higuain and Suarez at the time. And there is a part of me that feels like if we'd got Suarez, and maybe even if we got Higuain, like we might have won a title, especially in 2015-16, which was really the season that Ozil was at his best. And I think it wasn't his fault we didn't win the league that season. Like, that was the year he got 19 assists and 6 goals in the league. And there was that period where Giroud just could not score. And when Wenger only brought Cech into the club in the summer. And I don't know. I just think, like, there was an opportunity there to win quite a big trophy with Ozil. And while he did win 3 FA Cups, I don't think he got a medal last season for that one. He did contribute 80. I've got this here, 87 goals and assists in 175 league starts, which is pretty much exactly one every two games. Which, given the way his last couple of seasons went, that shows how good he was at the beginning. But I mean, I guess I feel like he did his job, and I completely agree with you, like, about even this season. I feel like people were being way too kind to Arsenal and Arteta during that bad run when it came to Ozil, because they were saying, like, well, you know, look, Arsenal don't have a lot of creativity, but are they going to be able to press and stuff the way that Arteta wants if they've got Ozil? But we weren't really pressing.
Yeah.
And so I was a bit like, well, if we're not pressing and we're also not creating, like, why have we sidelined? And we knew Smith Rowe was going to be injured for the first couple of months.
Yeah.
It's like, why have we sidelined this guy who has actually given the club an awful lot? Like,
And I think the thing was, we were still paying him. It's not like if we don't play him, we don't pay him. He was always going to be getting his 350 grand a week. That was the bit that was so mind-boggling. Even to not even register him for, like, the Europa League, it just was to show what you could. Because I think that's the bit that looks a bit personal. You know what I mean? And that's the bit that I think one day we will kind of know, right? You know, maybe it'll be Ozil's autobiography one day, or potentially Arteta's or whatever, like, you know, but there was something went on there, right? You know, and that was a bit I never really liked, and that's the bit that I feel like Ozil deserved a bit more respect than that, you know, to not even pick him for, like, the Europa League squad, and it was really, really strange to me, that, and that's, as I said, that was a bit I didn't really agree with. You know, like, obviously Arteta has to pick what he believes is the best team and the best squad to win each game, right? And if he doesn't believe that's fine, but to not register him for these competitions, and even, like, the League Cup, play him in the League Cup, that's the bit I think we'll find out one day, kind of what happened, and, you know, kind of what went wrong there. Because it always seemed that they had a good relationship, Ozil and Arteta, when they were playing, and again this was even the more strange thing, prior to lockdown, but he was playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, all this rubbish about, because he spoke out about the horrendous treatment of the Muslims in, like, China. I don't think that's got anything to do with it, because he was playing good 3-4 months after he'd made that statement, and he played well and was doing okay under Arteta. So there's something clearly went on there between, like, the start of the pandemic, I guess, and kind of now. And, you know, as you said, it just looks like the end of his time is near. And it's very sad as an Arsenal fan, and, you know, Arsenal fan of, I'm trying to think out now, it's 28 years. You know, I have to admit, in terms of technical ability, one of our greatest ever players. And, you know, and he's won, as you say, I think he's physically won 3 FA Cups, 4th in his time, but, you know, 3 FA Cups. I think deserved a lot more of he deserved more respect in the way that he's going to lead the club now. Because I think that's kind of what I was going to say in terms of when he joined. And, like, this is me, long-serving Arsenal fan, but it's like we had seen so many of our stars, like, just leave when they were coming to the, you know, I think back to, like, for example, Patrick Vieira, Henri, Cesc, Nasri, Van Persie. And when we signed Ozil, he was a genuine world-class player that was choosing to come to Arsenal. And it was that was the reason why we left Highbury. That was the reason why we left our home, right? So that we can move to the Emirates Stadium, so we could afford players like this and pay the wages that can attract these kind of players. And it looked like, okay, this was it. We were gonna at the time, you know, and I still to this day love Arsene Wenger. And it's like, you know, we had a great manager. We just need to start to attract these top tier players then to go along with the kind of kids that he was starting to nurture, and, like, the bargains he was going to still trying to find, like, your Olivier Giroud's, as much as, you know, because I think he was a bargain at the time, you know, he's gone on to prove he was a very good signing. But then also you look 2015-16, Ozil's got, I think it was 15 assists by December, and then Olivier Giroud stopped scoring, and we just, yeah, that's one of the kind of black marks on Ozil's legacy, I would say, that we didn't really win the league. And, you know, and I think even 13-14, when he first came, I know that I think that was the season City eventually won it, and it was the season Liverpool probably should have won it. But I'm pretty sure we were top in March, and you just think like if we could have just brought an extra body in to kind of complement Ozil then, and we just to give that extra bit of experience to help us kind of kick on. Because if you look at, you know, you look at our team in comparison to City's team in 13-14, you can't tell me it was any better, you know. But they had a bit more experience and they had won it a couple of seasons before, so they kind of knew how to grind out them results. Again, I guess that was the issue with Liverpool as well during the time. They didn't have the players that had become champions at that stage. But 2013-14, we probably should have won the league. 15, not as great. And I think that was a bit of a time in transition where we were kind of bringing players in like, you know, kind of like your Hector Bellerins. It was almost like our new crop of young stars, as it were. And in 15-16, after Danny Welbeck scores that winner on Valentine's Day against Leicester, how we didn't go on and win that league, I'll never know. And that wasn't Ozil's fault. He played hard that season. He gave it, as you said, and that was probably his best season for Arsenal. But we just fell short, you know, end up finishing second. And I think that's one of the things that will probably stop Ozil from being remembered as a Arsenal legend. I think he'll probably be remembered as an Arsenal great. And I think this is the thing with Ozil. I think he's almost like his legacy will be remembered better the longer he's not been at the club, if that makes sense. So almost like now how we now fully, now a lot of some of the silly Arsenal fans that wanted Wenger out for that time now fully appreciated the job that he did and the miracles that he worked. Now we've been struggling to get to top four for the past three seasons. You now really appreciate how much of an asset and how much of a legend Arsene Wenger is. I think the same will be said about Ozil when we look back, and you know, and I think he'd be remembered in a much greater light the longer time passes. And again, that kind of happens with all players, right? You know, because you kind of get like your YouTube clips out and you almost remember the good times. You don't remember the times when you know, Ozil looked like he wasn't interested, or kind of in some of them tough away games against the big four, and you're thinking, come on Ozil, mate, I know I could be more aggressive than this. Because this is the thing, right? You used to look at Ozil's like running stats, and he was never lazy. That's the thing about Ozil. No. You shouldn't think Ozil was ever late, but it was just sometimes he lacked that aggression. And in games playing away against the kind of big five, big six teams, it's almost like there was an element of, and this was something that could be directed at Wenger's teams in the whole of the Emirates era, was that there was an element of we didn't grab games in order to be allowed to play in like the last 20 minutes. So as in, we were kind of already out of games by the time we'd even found our kind of flow and found the way that we wanted to play. We were a bit more free, like kind of flowing. And I think that kind of summarizes to an extent the Arsenal Emirates era, but then also like the, When you get to the nitty gritty side of it, when you get to the bit where you just need to grind the game out and win and get the 3 points so you can get back on the coach and get home, they were the games that, even as someone who was a big Ozil fan, he could be seen wanting in them kind of games. But then again, so I, as I said, kind of going back again, I'll be very sad by the way that it's ended. I think he'll be remembered as an Arsenal great, but probably not an Arsenal legend.
Yeah, I think I probably agree with that. But I there's a part of me, especially I think in these last couple of years where the football has been not particularly good, where I look back on it and I think, you know what, we had it really good for a minute there. Like with, even without the results, you know, and people telling us every year that we were like a disappointing side. When we had, there were points where we had Cazorla, Ramsey, Ozil and Alexis on the field all at the same time. Yeah. Where we play some of the football, and Rositsky even late on. Some of the football we played was as good as I've ever seen Arsenal play. And like you, I've been an Arsenal fan for over a quarter of a century now. Like, and it's, yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess we didn't win that title, and that will always be the thing held against Ozil. But actually, I looked at something the other day and it said that his goals and assist rate against the top six was like 0.4 a game or something, and that was slightly better than Felipe Coutinho when he was at Liverpool. But yeah, I remember there were those rumours that he was like, that he would fake injuries or that or Wenger would leave him out of tough away trips or something. And in a way, I think his reputation, particularly in this country, the way people conceive of football is like, no, you have to be like a soldier and you have to like, I think it was never going to quite, he was never going to really be able to recover from that.
Yeah.
But like Wenger, I think that's actually a really, really good like analogy. I think like, I would love for him to, over the next few years, start to get the kind of rehabilitation of his reputation that we have started to see from Wenger. And obviously, you know, these are not Arsenal legends on remotely the same level. But Mesut Ozil, if we hadn't got Mesut Ozil in 2013, we wouldn't have got Alexis Sanchez in 2014. Yeah. And I think we could be far worse off as a club now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Sad times, man. Goodbye to Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, but it is. This, and I think, like, as you say, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you know, because he did it. We shouldn't forget either. He's done a lot for Arsenal. You know what I mean? As you say, like, he was the first world-class player that we signed in the Emirates era. That's black and white. There's no, you know, we kind of made Cesc Fabregas is always going to be Cesc Fabregas, but even a player like him, Samir Nasri, Van Persie, they weren't world stars when we brought them. You know.
Yeah.
Whereas Mesut Ozil had run tournaments for, like, yeah, he'd played extremely well in World Cups. I remember Germany against England 2010. Was that the one in South Africa? And like, so who's like, this guy is just absolutely amazing. And he was a genuine world star. And I think, yeah, and the lift he gave the club. I remember the next day we signed, but I went and got my yellow Arsenal shirt, Ozil number 11 on the back with the little googly eyes above, like, the, you know, the top of the, you know, for like really German, Turkish pronunciation and stuff like that. And it was just, he gave such a lift to the club and the fans, like, because we feel like every season we'd lose our best player. You know, it wasn't just like one off. It wasn't just, okay, we've lost like Van Persie, you know, because he didn't want to sign a deal. It was every season. And then it was like, okay, now we're back. This is, as I said, like, this is why we left Highbury. This is why we left that amazing place and that had so many great memories and we'd won so many great trophies there. It was to move to the Emirates so we could afford and attract players like Mesut Ozil. And it finally happened. And yeah, and it's just, as I said, very sad the way it's ended. But thanks for the memories as it like was.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, so for the second half of the podcast, we are welcoming Doogie Critchley in. How are you, Doogs?
I'm good. I'm the super sub for the second half of the podcast. Great to be back on the podcast. Yeah, excited for our little chat.
Yeah, well, you can give us 45 good minutes. That's what we know about you as a super sub. So I thought that we'd talk about some European football today because I think that you're one of our more knowledgeable members of FD. And so I thought we'd have a little dig into the Italian title race because it was quite an eventful week. So obviously Juve and Milan faced off in midweek last week. This was a game between top of the table Milan and Juve, who've been a little bit disappointing, but have managed to stay in touch with the leading pack and also have a couple of games in hand. And they ended up handing Milan their first defeat of the season, a 3-1 victory for Juve, courtesy of two goals from Federico Chiesa and Weston McKennie adding the third after Davide Calabria, who I think was standing in midfield, scored an absolute peach. Doogie, how do you think this changes the complexion of the Serie A title race? And what did you think of the game overall?
Well, I think Juve, first of all, were really pretty good, to be honest. I think they've really come into their own in the last month or so. We've seen, I think they started pretty slowly. I think it was difficult for Pirlo coming into a new side with no experience of management. He was the only manager that had changed at a top club in Serie A over the summer, and it took a while for him to get his ideas down. It seemed like no one was quite sure with how he wanted to play, but a lot of his signings have really started to come off, and whether they're his signings or the clubs, I mean, fair play to Juventus. Like, Chiesa's been excellent, as you say, recently. Weston McKennie's been a lot more useful than I thought. I've got to say that when he was signed in the summer, I thought it was maybe a combination of, you know, clearly a talented player, but also with the American market and Juve trying to become a more sort of commercially viable club, I thought that could be tied into it. But this was a really good display against Milan. And then they backed it up against the Sassuolo at the weekend as well. In a game that would have been quite different had Pedro Obiang not been sent off. But Juve coming into it, and Dybala as well, who endured a really difficult start to the season, wasn't really fancied. Lots of talk about his contract, lots of talk about him not signing a new contract. Basically just plenty of speculation. No one's quite sure what the truth is, really. But he's played a lot better recently. There was an awesome assist in, I think it was against AC Milan. It might have been the previous game against Udinese as well.
The
but
back
he's been
heel.
Playing much, much better. And Juve, you know, I think I'd be surprised if they won the title, but they're definitely going to be right in the mix, which at the start of the season, it didn't look like they were going to be at all. So credit to Perla. I've enjoyed watching them play in recent weeks.
Yeah, the only problem is, of course, that Dybala did have this great game, got two assists for Chiesa, but then may have sustained ligament damage over the weekend. So that is a little bit of a question mark over him in the back half of the season. But like you, I've been pleasantly surprised by Weston McKennie. I think he's had a really, really surprisingly good campaign. You know, like I thought at best he was going to be like a mediocre defensive midfielder, and it seems like he's getting into the box quite a lot. And Juventus seemed to be developing a style. Like, I was looking at the numbers, and the way that we can measure pressing, right, is with PPDA, so passes per defensive action. So this is how many passes a team allows before they attempt a tackle or a foul or basically something to disrupt the opposition's possession. And according to that, Juventus make a defensive action every 8 passes their opponents complete, which is the best in Italy. And also, according to the opposition passes per defensive action, they're the second hardest side to press in Italy. So it seems like Pirlo has got them playing really nicely, extremely difficult to take the ball off, but extremely aggressively when they don't have the ball. And I was wondering, do you feel like he has fixed this side, or do you still have question marks over it? Because in the stats, they do seem to be kind of coming together. And in some of the big games, they have pulled it out when they've needed to.
Well, if you look at their squad and their first 11, it's probably, in terms of raw quality, it's probably still the strongest in Italy. I mean, like the likes of Ronaldo, Dybala, Bernardeschi, Kulusevski, Bentancur, Chiesa, and they've got, you know, a plethora of midfield option as well. I would just say that I don't think their defenders necessarily have covered themselves in glory at stages this season. I watched the highlights of their game against Fiorentina, that really shocking defeat over the Christmas period, and Bonucci just doesn't look quite as sharp as he once did, which is inevitable. You know, he's getting on now, but they're still having to play a lot of games with Danilo, who obviously scored that incredible goal against the Sassuolo at the weekend. But I just worry slightly about their sort of defensive assuredness as well. And Juan Cuadrado has done a great job as a right back over the last 18 months or so. But, you know, that could probably be upgraded as well. And there's talk about them going for Brian Reynolds, the FC Dallas fullback as well, who I don't know a whole of a lot about, but his stats look pretty good from the MLS. So I think Juve, are they fixed? I think they're much more entertaining to watch than under Sarri, I've got to say. And it seems like the players seem to be enjoying playing under him a hell of a lot more, which after a really sort of troubled one season of Sarri, the players just didn't look like they knew what they were really wanting him to do. And they all looked very sort of stuck in their own positions and their own structure. Whereas Perla's got them playing a bit more free flowing, and they're definitely much better to watch. And there's a lot of players that have come into their own as well. I think Morata's been a fantastic signing as well. I can't believe I forgot to mention him beforehand as well. I was slightly sceptical about his arrival just because I think it felt like he was sort of their third or fourth choice in that position, but he's actually really stepped up as well. So there's a lot of positives from this Perlo period. I just hope that if they don't win the league this year, I hope that he's not fired on that basis alone, because they're, you know, he definitely needs time, and it was never going to be completely easy.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, I'm intrigued to see where this side goes. They do actually have the best defense by expected goals against in the league, but I kind of agree that this is not necessarily down to the defenders themselves. I think that probably that having Rabiot and Bentancur in midfield does a lot of work there, and this high pressing. But yeah, you know, you look at Kulusevski, is he even 20 yet? Like, he's somebody who's going to be a key contributor going forward, and Chiesa as well. So it does feel like they are, the fact that they're competitive means that even if they don't win the league this season, they'll be in a very good position to kind of return to the top of Serie A over the next couple of years. But for the time being, Milan do remain top. I think they're 3 points clear, because of course, there were some other results over the weekend where teams failed to make up ground. So the other big match was Roma versus Inter Milan. Now, this one ended 2-2. But Inter And I think this is one of the most underreported stories in Europe this season. Inter do not play like a Conte side. Inter are so, so aggressive. Mm. Like they're I think the top attacking side in Italy by expected goals. And when you watch them, I mean, they are seriously aggressive. In this game, they ended up with 1.9 XG to 0.9. That's away. So they were unlucky to walk away with a 2-2 draw. And currently this season, they're producing 2.2 expected goals per game, which is more than Bayern in the Bundesliga or Liverpool or Man City in the Premier League. So I don't know. I mean, who do you think the kind of stars of the season have been for Inter? And you said that you don't think that Juventus are going to win the title necessarily. If you had to pick a favourite, would you go Inter or would you go Milan or Napoli or somebody else?
Yeah, so at the start of the season, I said Inter, and I don't really want to change it just now because there is obviously that small gap. But I feel like Inter, ever since they got knocked out of the Champions League, which I was really disappointed in because I felt like they could have done a lot better in that group. I know it was challenging, obviously, with Gladbach and Shakhtar Donetsk as well, who turned out to be a much tougher opposition than people predicted. But that Champions League exit was really pretty deflating. I watched both their games against Real Madrid and they weren't really in either one of them. But ever since then, they've actually been really good in the league, to be honest. I think there's only maybe one defeat in their last eight games, and then this draw against Roma, they'd won most of their other games. And yeah, as you say, it's a pretty un-Conte-like side. Like, they're conceding far more goals than we ever thought they would this year. But he's really going for it in lots of the contests as well, and making some quite attacking substitutions as well. And it's sort of paying off. In terms of their key men this year, I think Barella's been very good again. Hakimi's obviously come into some great form at right wing back as well. He's made such a difference down that side. The main issue in that side is probably the combination of their central defenders when they don't play Skriniar or Bastoni. It's left for De Bruyne and Kolarov when he's come in as a centre-back hasn't looked as very good. And then left wing-back, I still think you can do better than Ashley Young, despite him sort of proving some of the naysayers wrong, I think, with his time at Inter. It's definitely not been a disaster many people predicted. But in terms of key players, it's really difficult to look past Lukaku. He's been absolutely epic. I think he's, the other day, I think he got to 59 goal contributions in 70 games for Inter. In all competitions, which is just insane, really. And I think he's covered up for the deficiencies of Lautaro Martinez, who hasn't actually had the best of years in terms of his finishing, at least. So it's just the Lukaku show, really. And Inter, I think, are going to be right in the mix again to the end of the year. It's so tight at the moment. It's such a good league to watch at the moment, Serie A. So I'm just really enjoying the journey.
Yeah, I mean, Lautaro Martinez, I kind of know what you mean. Like, when I watch him, I feel like he's less reliable than Lukaku, but he's still got 12 goals and assists in 13 starts in Serie A this season. Hakimi is now up to 9 goals and assists in 1,000 league minutes. And his goal in this game absolutely sensational. Received it on the edge of the box, cut onto his left foot and put one in the top corner. I think it was it in off the bar and the post?
Yeah, it was lovely.
It's one of my favourites. But I kind of agree. Like to me, the advantage that Inter and Juventus have is that depth. Like, I think Atalanta are probably too far off and the loss of Papu Gomez will be a real problem. I think Roma have been excellent, but I still look at their squad and I'm not quite sure how they've been excellent. And Milan, really good side, really young side. Obviously still top of the league, so we're not ruling them out by any means. But I'm not sure that if somebody key gets injured, like Calhanoglu, like Ibrahimovic, like Teo Hernandez, I'm not sure that they quite have the materials to cover it in the way that we would expect from Inter or Juventus.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, Zlatan has missed a couple of games recently and Rafa Leão has kind of played a bit more centrally as well, which he hasn't done so much this year. But yeah, I've been surprised with how well they've lasted the course, AC Milan, to be honest. But full credit to them and lots of their signings as well have similarly been really exciting. I think Jens-Peter Hoger as well, the new winger they've got, has really stepped up. Calhanoglu obviously has had a great campaign. Castillejo's played a lot better than he did in his previous year after joining from Villarreal. So I think massive credit to Pioli, but I just think it's probably going to be a three-horse race. I know what you mean about Roma. When you look at their, it's basically a sort of forward line of either past their peak players, like probably like Pedro and Dzeko, or sort of offcuts from around Europe. There's Borja Mayoral, there's Carlos Perez, there's Mkhitaryan, of course, and Fonseca's sort of getting them all to gel quite comfortably. And they've been excellent recently, although they did, yeah, as we said earlier, sort of hold on in this Inter Milan game to get that 2-2 draw. But fair play to Roma. I think they've probably got the the fifth or sixth best squad, but yeah, right in the top four mix. So fair play to them.
Yeah, it's an absolutely fascinating season in Serie A. And we've been banging this drum for years, but it really is maybe the most exciting league in Europe right now. So I don't know. You said you're sticking with Inter
for now,
as title
yeah.
winners. I think I will go for that as well. But I do think Napoli are dark horses. And there is also just the kind of pessimistic part of me that thinks, oh God, are Juventus going to pull it out?
It's a bit ominous, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's really worrying. But shall we move on then? Because I've also got a really interesting bit of transfer news this week. I mean, I say transfer news. I think everyone might have heard this by this point. But it looks like Atletico Madrid, who we knew went into this window gunning for a striker, terminated Diego Costa's contract. They looked at Arkadiusz Milik from Napoli. They looked at William José from Real Sociedad. And it looks like in the end, they're going to be able to wrap up a loan move with a €33 million option to buy for Moussa Dembélé from Lyon. Now, I know my feelings on this, Dukes. What do you think of this move?
I mean, I think it's a clear upgrade, to be honest. Diego Costa hasn't looked himself really since returning to Atleti. His goal return's not very good. His injury record hasn't been very good. So he's been cast aside and they brought in a 24-year-old striker, Moussa Dembélé, who hasn't had the best of times of it in the last year at least, probably at Lyon, but he's been sort of in and out of the side a bit. There's players that have played ahead of him and played better than him, to be quite honest. But if you're looking for a player to come in for 30 minutes or start the occasional easy game or, you know, just interchange with João Felix and Luis Suarez, I think Moussa Dembélé is a really excellent pickup. So, yeah, I think full credit to Atletico Madrid for getting this done. And out of Milik and William Jose, I think he's the best option as well. I would normally go for Milik, but due to the fact he hasn't been registered for Napoli's Serie A or Europa League squads, he hasn't played any football at all this season. Whereas Moussa Dembélé, whilst not playing at his best necessarily, comes in, you know, with a bit more football in under his belt, as it were. So, yeah, fair play to Atleti. I think this is really interesting.
Yeah, and Moussa Dembélé, I mean, I agree that he's had like a pretty rough time of it. He had back injuries last year. I think he had knee injuries as well. Though, again, you know, Milik is a risk in that regard as well. But 2 years ago, Dembélé was producing 4 shots a game, 0.8 expected goals and assists per 90 minutes. Then last year went down to 2.3 shots and 0.4 expected goals per 90 minutes. Now he's back up to where he was the year before. Exactly the same. 4 shots, 1 key pass and 0.8 expected goals and assists per 90. And that's as a 24-year-old. I mean, the one thing, the really smart thing that Atleti have done here is target somebody whose numbers are better than his actual output.
Yeah.
So he's only got 1 goal in Ligue 1 this season in about 650 minutes, but XG suggests he should have 6.
Oh, wow.
And so that's obviously one of those situations where you could say, we know that this player is good, we know he's producing, and we know these will start going in at some point because there's no evidence that he's a terrible finisher. He hasn't been previously in his career. We can get him for a knockdown rate. And I think he's also been hurt, you know, when it comes to minutes, by the form of the rest of that Lyon front line, because Memphis Depay's got 16 goal involvements in Liga. Kaotoko Ekambi's got, I think, 13. And Tino Kadewere, who kind of came out of nowhere, has got 10 already this campaign. So to me, this seems like a really, really good move. Like €33 million for Moussa Dembélé feels like almost nothing for somebody who at worst is going to be a good rotation and at best could be a genuinely starting quality striker. How does this change the complexion of the title race for you, Dukes?
I think it just sort of confirms my sort of feeling that I've slightly had for the last 2 or 3 weeks that, you know, this is actually on. Like, Atleti could do this. You know, we saw them lose to Real Madrid that time, but they've responded. They've won every game since. They lost at the weekend in the Copa del Rey, but that doesn't particularly matter. It's just one less competition to focus on, although, of course, Simeone won't see it like that. I'm sure he's absolutely fuming. But, yeah, I think Real Madrid and Barcelona's form has also improved. Barcelona in particular, I think they're unbeaten in the last 8 games. They thrashed Granada at the weekend 4-0. And Real Madrid, you know, continue to churn out wins in a slightly boring fashion, although some of their players, you know, they're taking it in turns to come to the fore as well. We've seen Lucas Vazquez from about 4 weeks ago. Marco Asensio looks like he's coming into some form as well after a pretty barren 12 months or so. But Atleti just look really solid. They capitalise on people's mistakes so well. They've got one of the players, one of the most sort of underrated players of this season, Yannick Carrasco, left wing back, who's completely displaced Renan Lodi. And he's playing out of his skin at the moment. And they just keep on churning out wins. So this is just another smart acquisition for, as you say, not that much money. And with the 20, with him being 24, say he plays well for 2 or 3 years, they could even turn a profit. Whereas, you know, some of their other moves they've made recently, the Diego Costas, the Vitolos, the Thomas Lamars, they've ended up making what probably is going to be massive losses. So this is just more smart thinking from a club on the up.
Yeah, it's about time they started making these longer term decisions. I think that this and, yeah, Hernan Lodi and moves like that, you know, Mario Hermoso, like, hopefully this will be the start of a more forward thinking Atletico kind of transfer policy, because I do think that that is where they've lost a bit of ground. If they'd made more sensible long term moves over the last 5 years, I think they'd be even further ahead of a club like Barcelona than they are right now. Do you think that this remotely changes Lyon's chances in Liga? How optimistic are you about them holding on to top spot?
Yeah, I'm really surprised they've chosen to do this. You know, they're actually right in the mix for the title. I mean, I don't still think that's not going to happen, especially now Pochettino's come in. Like, you'd expect PSG and Lille to maybe move ahead of Lyon towards the latter end of the year. I do think they've got a stronger starting 11s, and PSG certainly have the better depth as well. But yeah, surprising move for Lyon, but hopefully it's just... They had such a disappointment last year, and there is also threat that they're going to lose Memphis Depay either this January or in the summer. So I'm not really sure about the long-term thinking here. Like, what's really to gain from losing Moussa Dembélé in January, except for the €33 million? But I've also heard they're in massive debt as well. So this feels like a sort of financial decision.
Yeah, and especially, I guess, with Depay going on a free... I suppose it makes sense in that regard, like bringing some guaranteed money for a player who, to be fair, is not a key player for them right now and does have some injury woes in his past. But so then if I go for your three winners in Italy, Spain and France, the leagues that we've discussed, am I getting Inter, Atleti and PSG? Are those your picks?
Yes. I mean, the La Liga one's the hardest one, I think, for me at the moment. I said Real Madrid a couple of months ago. I've still got a feeling that they could really churn this out, to be honest. I think Barcelona are too inconsistent, although they do look a lot better recently. I'm going to stick with Real Madrid, Inter and PSG, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah, what about you, Pat?
I knew you were going to ask me. I will go for... I'll go for Inter as well. Though I'm not happy with that pick, but I wouldn't be happy with any pick in Italy. I will go Atleti in Spain.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like Jan Oblak in particular is having the season of his life. I think apparently after this last weekend of football, I saw a stat that said that every other team in Europe's top five leagues has conceded at least twice as many goals as Atletico have conceded in the league this season. They've allowed 6 so far. 6. Which is hilarious. And expected goals against, I think it says they should have conceded 12 or 13. And that is pure Jan Oblak magic. I mean, yeah. He has been in an unbelievable career. He's having maybe the best season ever.
Yeah, I think his save percentage was above 90% this year, which is just ridiculous.
Oh, of course it was. Yeah, that seems normal. Okay, yeah, I'm going to go Atleti. I'm going to go Inter. And then, oh, God. You know what? Nah, I think PSG will do it. I think PSG will just come back. I find it really hard to imagine them being substantially worse. And you know, just playing like... I think that Pochettino, for better or worse, is going to do more conventional stuff than Tuchel. And I think at the weekend, he ran out a midfield three of Herrera, Gay and Verratti. And I was like, yeah, that is Pochettino business. Like, that is what I expect. You know, I don't think we're going to be seeing like Marquinhos mucking about in midfield anymore. I think that we're going to see like a normal midfield of central midfielders. And I think they'll just roll teams over down the stretch.
I think the one thing he'll be slightly sort of concerned about is like the fullbacks have always been so crucial to Pochettino's system. And they're still, with Juan Bernat out, it's not a great array of fullback options, to be honest. That's one thing that he might be targeting for the summer, along with, you know, trying to sort out the futures of Mbappe and Neymar and Di Maria as ever, which are just constant, you know, there's just constant talk about them, which I think he'll keep Neymar and Di Maria, but Mbappe might sadly leave.
Yeah, I think so as well. But if he gets Dele Alli, that would make a big difference. I'm not sure if that will happen. But also, you know, I agree about fullbacks. They've been very important, but his ability to turn mediocre fullbacks, let's say, into stars. I mean, like, the performances he got out of Danny Rose and Kyle Walker were exceptional. I think he really improved both of those guys as players And then, you know, Ben Davis had that season where he was one of the best fullbacks in
Trippier
the league.
Trippier as well became very good. So
yeah, that's true. So maybe it's down to what he does with those players. But I think there's just too much of a talent advantage. And there's something, maybe it's just that I don't trust Rudy Garcia, but there's something about Leon that I just think is maybe a little bit fragile. But yeah, I don't know. We're inevitably going to look stupid on one of these by the end of the season, Leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I look stupid on most of my predictions, so I'm happy with that.
Well, I did the video this year on like our predictions for 2021, and I think I was like, Arteta will be sacked. And like, I don't necessarily think that was a bad shout. I think that's still possible, but
those three wins slightly turned it around, annoyingly.
Wasn't great timing. But yeah. I think that's basically what we've got time for today, Dukes. Thanks very much for joining me and talking over some of these interesting and I think underreported stories. Is there anything that you'd like people to go and check out after they've watched this?
I mean, if you've enjoyed our little section on Dembele to Atletico Madrid, why don't you go check out Continental Club on Eurofootball Daily from last week on YouTube, where we are talking about some hidden gems that some of the biggest clubs should buy. We're talking about Marcel Sabitzer, Rafa Guerrero, and Toon Koopmeiners as well from AZ Alkmaar. So go check that out.
Nice. That sounds amazing. Thank you very much to you guys for watching or listening. Make sure that you subscribe either to our channel, Football Daily Podcast, or to the podcast using whichever app you prefer. And hopefully we'll see you next time. Thank you as well, Dukes. And we'll catch
Absolute
you later.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.